0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. After a fourth consecutive weekend of no football, Scottish clubs continue to get to grips with how to survive the coronavirus lockdown, and authorities continue to wrangle if and when the season can return. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me in the studio is Alex Ray, and it's Hugh from Home, episode number, I don't know, we've lost track, Hugh Keevans, but you're in your man cave, you're well, and you're joining us tonight.
I am, Gordon. Listen, isolation fatigue is the new ailment being forecast for those who are suffering withdrawal symptoms where ordinary everyday life is concerned. I suppose that makes us fatigue busters here on Super Scoreboard as we try to keep football fresh in your mind. Nostalgia ain't what it used to be, as an old joke goes, but nostalgia is all we have to keep us company where there's no end in sight to the lockdown. So who are you going to call? Fatigue busters.
I don't really know how to follow on from that. Alex Ray, what was it this weekend? Start of football? Anything adventurous to fill the void?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I watched the game last night, the Rangers-Celtic final going back to 2002, Gordon. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Just good to see a bit of football, watching wee clippets, snippets here, there and everywhere. Spending time isolated with the family also, but
that's still a good thing. That's not wearing thin yet.
Well, I just said to you, this looks as if it's going to go for another couple of months. I'm not sure how I'm going to cope. But seriously, I was out today brushing sand into the divots and the so forth in the driveway. So anyway, I'm just trying to kill time.
Hugh Keevans, what have you got for us? You must have done something remotely exciting to fill the Super Scoreboard void at the weekend.
Upholstery cleaning. That's the new thing. Upholstery cleaning. The whole living room's come up beautiful. The only relief I got was I watched a Hearts Hibs Edinburgh Derby from Andy Walker scored for Hibs. That will show you how long ago. And Pat McGinley get the other goal. And who was Baggio? Who was called Baggio? Stevie Fulton. Stevie Fulton get both goals for Hearts. Terrific game it was.
Early 2000s are we talking?
What was it again?
We must have been.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Andy Walker at Hibs, Pat McGinley. Oh, in fact, it might have been the 1990s.
Earlier than that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, the 1990s, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, you and Mrs. Keevans, you're still okay? You've been a long and happy marriage, but I just wonder if you've ever had a test like this. You know, so much speculation as to how couples would survive being surrounded by each other at all hours of the day. Everything's still okay?
Do you know what? I haven't had a crossword. It's amazing.
Look at that. True love.
This woman has put up with me for 50 years through courtship and matrimony. And we're getting on just fine. Listen, if I can get involved in upholstery cleaning, this is going well.
We've come to the bottom of your riddle already. New Year's Day, 1998, two each. Is that the game you watched?
That's the one.
There we go.
Stevie Fulton, two goals for Hearts.
I've got you.
Good player, Stevie.
We'll look after you. I don't think I watched as much football this weekend as previous. I did see the game last night that you talk of. I've actually using this time to start ticking off the films. You know those films that you mention?
Absolutely.
And people look at you with that look of disgust. I say, I can't believe you've not seen that.
Absolutely.
That's the sort of route I'm trying to go down at the moment. So see, my wife's half Italian, right? Which makes her think that she's got this ownership over like Italian mafia films, which she doesn't really, but she takes them very seriously, and was appalled that I had never seen Goodfellas until the weekend. So that was the task. Get that ticked off, move on to the next one. I know that's right up your street, Hugh Keevans.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing that's keeping us going, Gavin and Stacey.
Oh, right, okay.
For some reason, I missed out on all of that. James Corden and Ruth Jones and Alison Steadman, but I've gone back with the... played the whole thing from start to finish. It's wonderful.
There we go. Now, we will try and talk about football, by the way, between now and 8 o'clock, and we'd love for you to join us. 0141 951 1025, and on Twitter at ClydeSSB. Now, here's your topic for tonight, because I was thinking all weekend, thinking, what are we going to talk about on Monday's show? There's clearly not a lot happening. And I thought, well, what would we usually talk about on a Monday night? Monday night Super Scoreboard usually goes along the lines of, can you believe what that referee did to us on Saturday? Honestly, it was blatant. I can't believe he's missed it. Always out to get us. There's another penalty we've been denied. So it got me thinking, Hugh Keevans, what would be the refereeing decision that broke your heart? Since we would usually spend our Monday nights complaining about referees at the weekend, Let's try and take a slightly more light-hearted approach and ask you, what is the refereeing decision that broke your heart? It can come from any era, any game, you tell us. The more details you've got, the better. 0141 951 1025 and on Twitter at Clyde SSB. What is the refereeing decision that broke your heart? We'll let that bubble away, Hugh. We'll let the listeners get involved in the phones and on Twitter. But it is a Monday night and it did get me thinking, how much do you just long for that simple question I usually ask you guys? What is your result of the weekend? Goal. Your goal of the weekend? Your howler of the weekend? It seems like such a long time ago.
I'm glad that you said any era, Gordon, because I can't think of one that broke my heart, but I can't think of one that frightened the life out of me. The first big match I covered as a journalist, first cup final, 1970, 50 years ago, Celtic versus Aberdeen, and the referee was one Bobby Davidson. And he had a very, very debatable penalty kick award to Aberdeen, which Joey Harper converted. Chopped off a Celtic goal. He had a nightmare in the eyes of the Celtic fans. He had a great game in the eyes of the Aberdeen fans. They won the Cup 3-1. Jock Stein started at the top of the stairs at Hampden. And he ripped into Bobby Davidson from the top step to the bottom step. Now, bear in mind, it's my first Cup final as a journalist, and I was told, do not ask Jock Stein a question unless you're absolutely certain it's a sensible one. And I stood, honestly, my chin had hit my chest by the time Jock got to the bottom step. It was unbelievable. He tore the referee into shreds. So there you are. Any era, 50 years ago, they were still doing it then.
There is not a chance that we are going to be short on answers to this, because we've got, you could pluck one from any week. Some of you are always on worrying about refereeing decisions. So try and pick one. What would be the refereeing decision that broke your heart? There must be one that sticks out, maybe because of the significance, or maybe there was no significance. Maybe it was just the worst decision you've ever seen. You tell us. Alex, what about as a player? Are there any that jump out? Any sending offs that you felt you were on the wrong side of?
I would say about the 15 red cards that I probably got, well, I would say a lot of them were dubious.
What are we talking, 50%? 10%?
I've no idea, but if I'm
is that
honest,
how many it was? 15 across
about,
the career?
I've no idea, round about that. I know it was quite a lot. If you can find that for me, it would be a miracle. But I'm going to give two. I know you said one there, just so that we get a bit of balance. The League Cup final this year, where the offside decision, I thought that kind of broke a Rangers' heart. From a Celtic perspective, you go back a couple of years ago, the Ronnie Dyler handball, the Inverness player clearly handballs it on the line. So just for balance, so we can get a nice, sensible discussion going tonight, there's two ones for the Old Firm.
There we go. If you want to elaborate on any of the ones that the guys have mentioned, that's fine. If you've got any of your own, let's have them. The more obscure, the better. So even if we've never heard of it, but you can come on and convince us, we'll take it. 01419511025 at Clyde SSB on Twitter. What was the refereeing decision that broke your heart? Get in touch. I should actually ask you, just to see how in depth your research is, your result of the weekend, because the Belarusian league is still going.
Oh, the result was clearly Rangers winning 3-2 last night.
It's the only one in Europe, Hugh Keevans, and I've done the research for you. I would say that Energetic 2-0 win against FC Minsk. They stay top of the Belarusian table with 100% record after three games.
Remarkable.
But
how is it Belarusian still going?
Belarusian referees are rubbish as well.
So I think we should do it. I think we should adopt a Belarusian team on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Follow their progress every week. I think I'll leave that out there. Someone can nominate. Yeah. I don't know which team. Like I say, Energetic are top of the league. So there's a glory hunting element to that. I wonder if we just choose someone else at random, pull them out of a hat, and that can be our team.
I'll have to have a look at the actual league.
Well, it's going to have to be one that I can pronounce. Yeah, exactly. Too. And they've only played three games, so we could get really into this as the season goes on. Right, 01419511025 at Clyde SSB on Twitter. The refereeing decision that broke your heart, or if it's just the worst decision you've ever seen and it didn't quite break your heart anyway, that's fine. We'll take them all. Gary is a Celtic fan from Shettleston. Hi, Gary.
Hiya, boys.
Hi,
Gary. Gordon.
Hi, Gary.
Could you pick one, Gary?
See the man you're saying. It didn't really break my heart. It was mere Davy left side. This is an easy one. She's still to remember. George Cadetti against Rangers. Because I think at the time, around that stage, he was signing And then the SFA, when they let him sign, it was like a conspiracy, you know, so he couldn't play for a certain time, but he played Rangers and things like that. Then to chop off a goal was like something like 3 yards onside.
I was going to say, so it was quite close, that one, Gary, wasn't it?
Yes, you'd have loved that one.
To be honest with you, it was a ridiculous decision. When you look back and the linesman's looking across that line and sees that, you're absolutely right, it was a mile offside.
And that was, Hugh, you'll remember that, I'm sure. I think that was that the New Year derby. I don't think it was bang on New Year's Day, but around that time, mid to late 90s, 97 or something like that.
Yeah, Cadetti was a sensation. I remember Tommy Burns signed them for Celtic, and an immediate sensation. And there was the controversy over his registration being delayed. That cost the then SFA General Secretary, as they were known then, Jim Farrey, that cost him his job. Celtic received an official apology for the registration being withheld for longer than it should have been. But Cadetti was a terrific player for Celtic, and the goal, I think Gary is maybe exaggerating the distance by which he was onside, but it was onside. It was by a hair's breadth, but he was onside, and it was a terrific match, and it had a sour end.
Well, I don't know. I mean, even Alex Ray's given the gesture in here. Alex Ray thinks it was quite a distance on.
It might even have been the distance between me and
the
you.
Social distance. Yes. Do you think it was social distance?
I'll have to look at it during the break, but I would say it was at least a yard.
And Gary, over time, that'll be 6 yards by now, surely. That's the way these things work, is it not?
It was 12. I was talking to somebody yesterday. It was 12.
What was it about it, Gary? Because I'm sure over the course of the night, we're going to hear loads of different types, you know, ones that maybe cost you a cup or cost you a league. Was this just the fact, just the distance, the fact that it was such an error? Is that what makes it stick out?
We had a chance to win the league that year. So we did. I think if he got signed in time with Jim Farrey, I don't want to say the words about Marin Latt, but we've won it anyway. We've won his contract he signed for Celtic. It could have had a different outcome that season, Gordon.
That'll be the thing, Hugh. These refereeing decisions, they might just be one-off incidents. They might be things that you believe had ramifications for the rest of the season. Yeah. That one you told us about, Hugh, to kick us off. What year did you say it was from again?
1970.
Well, how did those things play out? Because having come to this game a lot later on, you would have to imagine that these debates do rumble on longer now, because we've got social media, we've got replays, we've got various angles, and everyone can replay it and slow it down and zoom in and zoom out, and in truth it never lets it die down. I was going to ask you if back then mistakes did die down, but then maybe not, because you've remembered that one, and Gary's on with one from, what, 23 years ago as well.
You know, it played out by Jock Stein being called in front of the SFA to explain his tirade against Bobby Davidson, and he was fined £10. Now, that wasn't even a slap on the wrist. You know, it was a derisory sum of money, which, to the way of thinking for many people, meant that the SFA were of the opinion that the referee's performance had been very poor. This is a Celtic side who were midway through the run to the first nine in a row, who in 1970 would also play in their second European Cup final. Aberdeen had a terrific run through the Cup, but the fact of the matter was that on the day, the referee had a very poor game. And, you know, as Alec has said, you go 50 years later and you find Rangers all over Celtic in the League Cup final, but Celtic get the goal from Christopher Julien that appears to be offside. So swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, good luck. But that's what I mean, Alex, about a different generation, because this season, that would be one of the high profile ones from this season, would be Christopher Julien. And I mean, the level of interest in that video and the still frames and lines being drawn and all sorts of scrutiny put on it, people spending genuinely hours to try and prove. And people are actually looking at the same image, and one person will tell you that that's clearly onside, and the other will tell you it's clearly off. You know, that's where we're at now. I just wonder, I'd like to take a trip back and see how differently it was back then, when you just had to take someone's word for it who was at the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd be lucky in their days as well, particularly the big games, Gordon, that you'd be lucky to maybe have one camera. You know, that's what you will look at then, and
grainy footage as
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, now you've got a fourth official who's actually making decisions as well from the side of the pitch. So there's so many more factors. But in some ways, I would like to go back to the old days purely for the point of view, as it'd be less arguing, because, you know, as you say, you know, the scrutiny, particularly on referees as well, you know. And I think it's the big decisions. I don't think the kind of throw ins and so forth are that. Well, that's going back to one as well. You remember years ago, I think you're about
to explain the one that George and Rutherglen's has lined up. So I'm not going to steal his thunder. George, on you go. What have you got for us?
How you doing, lads? All right.
George, was Alex about to steal your thunder, do you think?
I think so. There's two that broke my heart, but the main one was the 1989 Scottish Cup final. It's a combination of a bad refereeing decision and bad play by our right back at the time. Rangers were going for the treble, I'm sure. It's the first time I ever cried at a football game. I watched it at my friend's house, and it was the one where it should have been a Rangers throw-in. It went quite clearly a Rangers throw-in. It went to Celtic, and somehow it led to Gary Stevens getting the ball. Bad pass back to Joe Miller, and then obviously Celtic won the game 1-0. I was devastated. I think I was just about 11 at the time, and that, it just broke my heart. Because it was the first time I'd seen Rangers win a treble. They won plenty after it, but I remember that one.
Alex, is that the one? Let's do that one first, George, because I just had a feeling that one would come up. And Alex, was that where you were about to go?
Yeah, but I was actually going in the middle of a sentence saying that, you know, that interested in throw-ins. And I always go back to wee Joe Miller, who, you know, I've done a few wee Q&As with Joe over the years, and he loves to throw that one in, you know, because I think it annoys plenty of people. So
the most controversial throw-in we've ever seen, is that right?
Yeah, I think there was a wee bit of play to still go before it actually got through because of the bad pass back and so forth. But that would most certainly go down as a disappointing one. As you see, George was in tears.
And to be fair to George Hugh, he acknowledges his own team's part in it as well. He mentions that the defending, I should say, should have been better.
Well, you talk about the heat of battle, Gordon. And in those games, you know, everything plays at a whirlwind speed. And it certainly was Rangers throwing, absolutely no doubt about it. But I think it was big Roy Aitken who lifted the ball and threw it in. And everyone was so frantic that nobody at the time said, wait, hold on a minute. And the ball was put up the park into the Rangers half of the field. Gary Stevens made his mistake. Wee Joe scored. And then took off for the Rangers end for reasons best known to himself. And he was brought down by a tackle from Peter Grant that would have pleased Doddy Weir if he'd done it at Murrayfield. The other thing I remember from that day, Joe was then called in for the drugs test at the end of the game. You know, they picked one player from Celtic, one player from Rangers. And Joe was in there and everybody's gone. The Celtic bus had gone, the Rangers bus had gone, the fans had all gone, the place was empty, and Joe was still in there, unable to do what you have to do, Alec, in order to go through the drug test. And he must have come out about 7 o'clock at night.
George, we'll let you back in on you go.
Every client here. the other one is, I always remember it, it was a year Rangers unfortunately didn't capitalise on 10 in a row, and it was a cup final, and it was, I'm sure it was Hearts against Hibs, Hearts against Rangers. Hearts were 2-0 up. I think McCoy's through McCoyst. I'm sure it was McCoy, 2-1 through McCoyst. And then McCoyst was denied a stonewall penalty, which should have made it 2-2. I always remember it to this day. I actually celebrated because I thought the referee gave the penalty, because I couldn't believe he would never give it. It was the stonewallest penalty you've ever seen in your life. That also broke my heart, by the way, just to make you aware.
See, I like that, because I did say we don't always have to remember them. And Alex, you've seen many Rangers games, and that's a high-profile one, but you're looking bewildered at me. You can't quite...
I think, what year was that, George? I'm trying to...
It was the year that they all left. It was the last year that Walter Smith was in charge.
97, 98.
McCoy's was straight... It took kind of a deflection. McCoy's kind of went straight through, ready to hit the ball, and I can't remember who tackled him, but they took the legs right to the back of him, right down, and it was a stonewall penalty. And once again. Listen, these decisions go for you, they go against you, but when they go against you and you lose a cup final, it breaks your heart.
Certainly does, Hugh.
Well, what would have made it even worse for George and his fellow Rangers supporters was it that they lost at Celtic Park. That's where the final was played. It was Walter Smith's last season. It was the last season for many of the players. They were an ageing side by then. And Wim Jansen had come in and won the title, which prevented Rangers from getting 10 in a row. Cup final played at Celtic Park and they lost that as well.
Thank you very much, George, in Rutherglen. I know it sounds serious, but we're trying to do it with a slightly light-hearted feel. I don't want to argue too much in these difficult times, but nevertheless, let's reopen some old wounds just a little bit. We're looking for the refereeing decision that broke your heart. 01419511025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, tackling compensation claims for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompsons.com.
Hugh Keevans joins us from his man cave. Alex Ray is here with me, Gordon Duncan, in the studio, and we are here as always just trying to provide a bit of a football fix. That's four consecutive weekends without football. Would you have known that off the top of your head? Because I had no idea. I had to check the calendar.
No, before we came on. I wouldn't have thought it was 4 weeks, but now that you say it, it's
actually
starting to grind on us a little bit, that, you know, because it could be a little bit longer.
It certainly could be, but we're trying to take you on a trip down memory lane, trying to lighten the mood. I had a look on Twitter though, and not everyone's getting their mood lightened, Hugh. I think we've reopened some old wounds. This discussion is not really to be taken that seriously. It's just a bit of fun. We're looking for the refereeing decision that broke your heart, because on a Monday we would usually be arguing about this type of thing. So what's the refereeing decision that broke your heart? Countless coming in on Twitter. Governor Walker's got one that you'll know all about, Hugh. He says Celtic getting a penalty in the 77 Scottish Cup final when the ball hit Big DJ in the knee. Text him, he'll back me up.
Yeah, to this day, and we're now talking 43 years, so it's not as if they better.
No, never.
Bob Valentine was the referee, a Dundonian like Big Derek. Derek had both hands somewhere near the ball. Could you prove beyond all shadow of a doubt that he handled the ball? I don't think so.
Oh, some people
Bob Valentine, can. Yeah, of course. But Bob Valentine was in no doubt. Gave the penalty. Andy Lynch scored with the penalty. Now, I've known Big Derek for 5 decades, and he still goes on about it. I never touched it.
Another season, another treble picks out John Hartson's goal in a cup match at Hampden. It would have taken the game to extra time if it had been correctly awarded. Clearly 2 yards onside.
I think I do remember that one. Yep, was it Bomber Brown who played him on?
No. You're off in the time frame there. For sure. Reagan, this, Hugh, we're not going back too far. Reagan says, remember the Motherwell goal last year at Celtic Park when the Celtic player was down and Motherwell players played on and scored from the throw-in? That brought some criticism for the ref.
Well, that was James Scott, if memory serves me correctly, who went off down the line there with the ball. But what was the other one that was been mentioned there?
John Hartson.
I remember Martin O'Neill that day. Oh, dear me. He just looked at the... He kept saying to the linesman, you have got to get the big calls right. You have got to get the big calls right. And he was absolutely correct, because it was a very poor decision. That John Hartson was robbed.
Right, I have to give acknowledgement to various people on Twitter, the ones that are jumping out at me at the moment. We Kev... And who else is on there as well? Someone else sent it in. Wee Kev was one of them, and David Kelly as well. But I'm not going to read them out, because I knew that someone would phone in this one. And stepping up to the plate is John in Cambus Lang. John.
Evening panel. I hope yous are all staying safe out there just now in these circumstances. But the one that got me was 2007. The game, Rangers, Scotland v Italy, the free kick against Alan Hutton, but quite clearly was a free kick to Scotland, and obviously Italy scored for that free kick, and that was a bit of a gutter that day. The whole country was up for that day, and I remember being in Glasgow, and every pub in Glasgow was absolutely full, and they were running out of drinks and everything, but it was just a great day. Then that spoiled it with the referee's decision. The panel remember it.
John, I can't forget about it, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Hugh, that ticks both boxes, really. It's got the heartbreaking element that we asked for, but also as well, in terms of being a genuinely inexplicable decision. You know, you would challenge anyone to watch that and try and side with the referee. The Italian player clearly barges Alan Hutton to the ground, and then somehow the free kick goes the other way. Were you working that day, Hugh?
Yeah, well, and you know, we've been waiting since 1998 to get to the finals of a major competition, either European Championship or World Cup. And we really felt this was our time. This was going to be the moment. Now, here in this country, everyone believes that referees have an agenda in favour of one club against another club. But where do you go with a referee who's refereeing Scotland and Italy? What do you accuse him of? Other than incompetence. And that was an incompetent decision.
Or,
and the cost of that incompetent decision was very high.
See, you say that, Hugh, but you must have heard Alex McLeish's version of events, that he was called by, I think it was an Italian journalist in the aftermath, who, and I'm definitely paraphrasing here, who said something along the lines of, come on, you don't think they would have a major competition without France and Italy at it, do you?
Well, I mean, you go back to when France played the Republic of Ireland, and Thierry Henry, I mean, doesn't handle it once, he handles it twice, three times. He's practically playing Shaquille O'Neal by the time it goes in. So, you know, that's what happens, folks.
Yep.
I watched that in Paris that night, by the way.
What, the...
Yeah.
The Henry handball?
Didn't go down well. Well, it went down well there, I should say, but didn't go down well anywhere else. Yeah, I mean, John is bang on, isn't he?
Yeah, without doubt. It was a diabolical decision. And I was actually at the game, Gordon, as a supporter that day, and I couldn't believe, you know, the spirit. You know, we felt as if we were going to get there, and the atmosphere in the place was absolutely remarkable as well. But just going back to the John Hartson one just prior to that, it was Arthur Newman who played them on site.
There we go. John, I wonder if anyone out there can remember the name of the referee. I wonder if the depth of the disappointment stretches that far.
I think I put it to the back of my mind these days. But funnily enough, at the start of the show, you were mentioning Jim Farry. My dad actually built a wall for Jim Farry a few years ago and said it was some of the best tea and biscuits he's ever had when he was doing it. So, perks of the job, yeah, Alex. And also Andy Lynch, you just mentioned, he's good friends with my dad as well. What a great player he was. And I'd imagine George Bowie would be quite a fan of him, being a modern legend back in the day as well. So, yeah, but the referee just now, I need to Google, if I'm being honest.
Manuel Gonzalez, there I didn't remember it either.
From where?
Spain.
Lovely.
Yeah, I just decided to look it up. I must admit, I had no idea. No. Manuel Gonzalez, Hugh. There we go. We'll note him down. We'll make sure he stays off the Christmas card list.
Well, I mean, again, when you're playing Italy, Italy used to have a reputation, and sometimes it was taken to courts of arbitration and proved to be the case that the game wasn't always above board. But where do you go with a Spanish referee in charge of Italy versus Scotland? You know, it's nothing to do with agenda. He just made an incompetent decision.
I suppose his assistant would have... I'm trying to think back. Did the flag go up? Would it have been right in front of the assistant ref?
I think that's maybe where
the mistake came from.
I'm sure Alan Hutton comes across and covers.
Yeah, because it's not his side, is it?
Yeah, he ends up at left back. And he just tries to keep the ball in, and he's just trying to readjust his feet, Gordon, to come back on the pitch. And he just gets barred off the ball. And it was a diabolical decision, whatever way you look at it. And
it was chucking it down as well. In true Scottish fashion, we had the disappointment and the rain, because we needed a bit of both. Thank you very much to John in Cambus Lang. You can get in touch with us on Twitter as well, at Clyde SSB. Let's take another look and see what's doing the rounds on Twitter, where we line up another call. We're just having a bit of fun tonight, trip down memory lane, looking for the refereeing decisions that broke your heart. And even if they didn't, so even if you just want to come on and talk about one that, you know, you can't get over it, or you can't believe it was given, even if it didn't break your heart, that's fine. Scott Lorimer, Hugh, one of the worst decisions I've ever seen was when Gaza got booked for booking the ref.
Oh, yeah. The referee had a humour bypass that day. You know, what could be more understandable than a player noticing that the referee's dropped a yellow card on the grass, picks it up and yellow cards the referee, and the referee, a total humour bypass, and books Paul Gascoigne. I mean, really.
Oh, there's another one. I was hoping this one would come up. If someone wants to phone us about this and add a bit more detail, that would be brilliant. Paul Morrison has teed us up. He says Partick Thistle, Dundee United, Les Mottram. United disallowed goal, came back off the stanchion. The defender picked it up, then throws it back to the keeper.
Yeah, and do you know what? That was, I think, in 1993 or early in 94. Les Mottram then went on to be the only British referee to officiate at the 1994 World Cup finals in the USA. Because I remember going out with him one night for dinner and we were talking about that game. Jim McLean was the Dundee United manager. A man, Alec, who had a short fuse, shall we say. the ball's in the net, comes out, the Partick Thistle goalkeeper throws it to the nearest Partick Thistle player. He hits it up the park and Les Mottram is waving, play on, play on. Goal not given. They tell me that wee Jim was, to use the only word appropriate, apoplectic.
And there must be something about Firhill, Alex, because remember, what was it, less than 2 years, about 18 months ago?
Yeah, the one it was in.
Chris Doolan, yep, against Morton, the ghost goal.
I wrote it down. The referee and the linesman between the both of them couldn't get it correct. We'd Partick Thistle fans coming on here saying it was absolutely diabolical. They were seeing it from 40 yards away. However, they both missed it. And going back to the Gaza one, it was Dougie Smith as a referee then, Hugh.
Yeah, but that was only a couple of years ago, I think 2018, that one, and it happened at Firhill again, didn't it? Was it Chris, the underside of the bar, I think it almost touched
absolutely
the net, didn't
it? Yeah, without doubt. Came back out. Going back to part decisions, you asked me earlier on about bad decisions. I scored a goal at Partick Thistle and ran right up the main stand, cup in my ear. And obviously we're talking about referees, but the officials, the linesman decided that was over-exuberant.
Inciting a riot, yes, quite right. Riot. Got to go for
can't
that type
celebrating
of thing.
Ridiculous.
More than one tweet coming in, actually. A good few about the Gaza thing. It ain't personal. Says, still can't get over the ref booking Gaza. Showing the a shocking, no sense of humour whatsoever. What makes a great referee? There we go. It's one of the, you always try and think, would anyone have cared at all if they hadn't made that decision? And the answer to that one's no. Nobody. Not even. Well, maybe in this city you get the odd one, but really it was just a bit of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And if you can't see the humour in that, you know, I think everybody in the stadium's laughing. You've got to also know the character you're dealing with. You know, Paul was just Paul, really. And to do that in Bookham was, as you say, bypassed, needed you.
Thank you very much. Let's go and get some travel with Stephen. It's the perfect time to hear from you though, because once we're doing that, we're going straight back on the phone. So if you want to add something to the refereeing decisions that broke your heart, 0141 951 1025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Your comeback is on. Talk to Thompsons.com.
Hugh Keevans and Alex Ray here on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. The two ways you can get in touch: on the phones on the usual number, or on Twitter at Clyde SSB. It's Monday night and these are abnormal times, but in normal circumstances we'd probably be arguing over all the big talking points from the weekend. So that inspired us a bit tonight, and we thought we'd ask you, what are the refereeing decisions that broke your heart? The one you just cannot get over, or perhaps the worst one you've seen. I really running out of way to describe how many are coming in on Twitter. Kevin Moran says, it didn't break my heart, but Lampard's goal that never was against Germany in the World Cup, superb decision, he says. Now that would fall into the category of,
made you happy?
Not so much that, but just how bad. I mean, how bad? In fact, was that not the decision that sort of accelerated the push towards goal line technology?
It was, yes, I remember it well. It was over in Germany, wasn't it?
Would it have been the 2010 South Africa, yep. I think South Africa against Germany. Yeah.
Yep, I remember it. And
miles
it
really, in.
Oh, listen, it was early. Even if you go back to one a couple of years ago when Hibs were playing Hearts, the ball was clearly over a yard. Yep. Neil Lennon was kind of remonstrating from the halfway line. And again, you know, that's when you're actually looking for some sort of help, even goal line technology, to miss that.
Callum McLean says, a couple of years ago, Kipre sent off for Motherwell when Sinclair dived in the box. We were denied a penalty just before that when Moat was tripped in the box, says Callum. I'll move on, I'll get myself in trouble.
I cannot believe you waited almost 45 minutes before a Motherwell bad decision.
It wasn't me, it's Callum McLean. Blame Callum. And Hugh, you've been on the show a long time. Token Jester says, what about the refereeing decision that took up the most Super Scoreboard shows? The Cup semi-final, Celtic Inverness. Can't believe it's not been mentioned. The only three people in the stadium that didn't see it were the officials. I think he's right about the decision that took up the most Super Scoreboard shows.
Well, as I said earlier on, of Martin O'Neill, Martin O'Neill's advice to the linesman at Hampden, you have got to get the big calls right. Now, the loss of that game prevented Ronnie Dyla from winning a treble with Celtic. You know, he would have gone to the final, he could have won the treble, and as we know, very few men have done that. Only Jock Stein, Martin O'Neill, Brendan Rodgers. So it doesn't come along every now and then. But it was a terrible decision, and I remember on the Monday on this programme saying that it was such a grotesque decision, such incompetence, that I thought the referee and his assistant referee should have been stood down for the remainder of the season. It was that bad. It was an arm fully extended, and it was, to use a Martin O'Neill word, shocking decision.
Funny you say that, because Frank in Springburn, what stands out for you?
Well, I've actually got three. How are you doing, guys? I've actually got three. One that actually amused me, and two that broke my heart. Well, maybe not broke my heart, but it really annoyed me.
Right.
I'll take you back to the earliest one. That's the one that abused me. It's 1986. Hughes at the game. It's live on the telly. I was at the game as well. St Mirren against Celtic, 1986, with Celtic Stoke Park, they won in the league. We won it ourselves. We won the 5-0. Okay, was there. Do you remember that one, too?
I was there with the late Jimmy Sanderson and Richard Park in the Love Street press box.
That's right, because there's actually still audio footage on YouTube for that game. And the other one's the Dundee game. There's audio footage of the two of them at the same time. Anyway, at the end of that, as soon as the final whistle goes, and Celtic are celebrating one league, look at it. Andrew Waddle was the referee. Look at his face at the end of the game. It's a picture. It's tripping him. I don't know if anybody's ever noticed. I don't know if you've noticed that one, Sue. If you've not, I urge you to look at it. Look at the footage. Look at his face at the end of that game. His face is tripping him. It's unbelievable.
Maybe he was just worried about what he was going to have for his dinner that night or something. Could be a completely innocent explanation. You
know, let me tell you that Andrew was an Edinburgh man. And I'm quite sure it didn't matter to him what happened at Love Street. He also worked in a mortuary, so he had more things to worry him in life than who won at Love Street. But he was a terrific man, Big Andrew, and that was an unbelievable day in the history of the championship. You know, the way it unfolded, 7 minutes to go, Hearts were the champions. 7 minutes later, Celtic were the champions. Incredible day. Never forget it.
And now, Frank, I know you've got a cracker up your sleeve which brought out quite the response from the Celtic manager at the time. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, before that, I'll go for the... I'm doing them in order.
All right. Okay, sorry. On you go.
That one you talk about is the Martin O'Neill, the one Juventus. Juventus 3, Celtic 2 in Turin, 2001, with Amoruso. Blatant dive, and Martin O'Neill goes off his head at the end of the game.
That's a technical term, Hugh. He did as well. I wouldn't argue he went off his head.
Yeah, it wasn't Lorenzo Amoruso. Let me say right away, it was Nicola Amoruso. And it was a terrible decision. And that was the night that Martin brought the word shocking into the vocabulary of the game. And he was quite right. It was a shocking decision.
Do you remember the rant, Alex? That to me is possibly more memorable than the decision. The Celtic fans might not agree, but I can't fully picture the decision, but I can certainly remember Martin O'Neill's rant.
Well, listen, it's understandable as well. See, when you were put up for the press 20 minutes after a game and the emotions are still running high and you've had a bad decision against you, Gordon, it's brutal, because you're up against professional journalists are just trying to push your buttons, trying to get some sort of response. And as Hugh says, you know, you've been round the block, Hugh, like you guys, you're just looking for that shocking reaction.
It was great. Frank, on you go, carry on.
Yeah, the other one is quite recent. Well, not recent, but a lot more recent than that one. It was Willie Collum, Celtic against Rangers, and he's back to the goal, back, he's back to the play, and he gives a penalty.
I bet he heard it, didn't he, Frank?
He never seen the penalty. Absolutely. He heard it. Apparently somebody heard. He heard it. I don't know how he gave it, but it was never a penalty.
Hugh, that's another one that will go down forever. And again, not just because of the mistake, but that explanation. That's the bit that people remember.
Yeah, as I say, in this part of the world, referees are always said to have an agenda, and Willie Collum was not forgiven by the Celtic supporters. And Frank is indicative of the Celtic supporters who will never forgive him. But if memory serves me correctly, when Christopher Julian scored the goal that won the Betfred Cup final and Rangers protested that he was offside, was the referee not Willie Collum?
We've not got time for that sort of stuff. We're wanting to take you back to those single moments. We're not interested in them getting evened out 20, 30 years later. We're talking about the hearing of decisions. Frank is not over it, Alex.
No, and it's understandable if the referee's turned his back. I think Willie Collum sent off Morelos when he didn't quite see him make some sort of thing. Mate, St Mirren last year as well, hence it, and then Rangers came out and kind of questioned certain things as well. So he's got a wee bit of history for that, will it?
Ah, come on, this is a bit of fun. There are no witch hunts here against individual referees, just a bit of fun. We're robbed of the football, we're robbed of the drama, the controversy. So what were the refereeing decisions over the years that broke your heart? We'll get back to the real serious stuff in due course. Let's try and take a friendlier approach to it tonight. Stephen is in Paisley. What have the buddies been hard done by, Stephen?
Good evening, panel. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm getting back to 1980. Right. I'm pretty sure Hugh was at this game. It was a Scottish Cup replay. St Mirren went to Parkhead on the Saturday. We drew one each. We come back on the Wednesday night. Not a ticket game. There was over 30,000 in the ground. Thousands locked outside the ground. The game never kicked off till about 8:20 that night. And the third goal, Johnny Doyle scored. A mile offside. Linesman had his flag up. Dropped his flag. Referee let play go. Some other players had all stopped. And the goal was allowed. And it was just the biggest injustice ever.
Now, did you say that wasn't on television, Stephen? Is that what you said there? No?
I'm not too sure if it was.
All right, sorry, no ticket, you said, sorry.
They never made it a ticket game, but there was thousands. I mean, Celtic fans that were there that night, they'll tell you what Love Street, that whole area was like, Caledonia and the Love Street end. There was thousands, literally thousands locked out of the ground that night.
Hugh, is that one you remember?
Oh, yeah. The atmosphere was incredible. And Stephen's perfectly correct. The crowd. I don't think it was his last game, but Doyle that night was unbelievable. You can argue over the legitimacy of the third goal that Celtic got, but Johnny Doyle that night was unbelievable. And Stephen, if you go back to the Saturday game, St Mirren were leading 1-0 at Celtic Park until literally seconds to go. Is that not the case?
That's right, there was a minute to go and they equalised. We were all over them for 90 minutes. Celtic got a last-minute equaliser. And like I said, we went back to Love Street on the Wednesday night. And I mean, it was a fantastic game. I'd missed the first goal. That's how long we had to wait to get into this ground. Jimmy Bowen got the first one, I think. And then Duke Sumner got an equaliser in the second half. And then it obviously went to extra time. It's two each, went to extra time. And Doyle get the controversial goal. It was offside as far as I'm concerned.
Some memory, Stephen. I like that. You've recounted that pretty well. I was Googling it while you were chatting away, and it looks like you've got all the details spot on to me. But there's a name, Alex, that jumped out there, because
yeah,
I think you had one you wanted to raise with Hugh.
Hugh, this is going back to the late 70s when Johnny Doyle was playing with Celtic down in air, and he crossed the ball from the left hand side. It scalped the referee, flush in the side of the face, the head. Referee decks it. The referee gets up and shows him a red card for it. Do you remember that, Hugh?
Yeah, I do. I also remember Johnny Doyle getting sent off as an Air United player playing against Celtic. Now, for those of us who were privileged to know Johnny, he was what a character he was. To say that John Doyle was a Celtic supporter would be the understatement of this millennium, the last millennium, and any millennium you have in mind. And he said, Alec was talking about interviews with players after games, and pressing buttons. There was no need to press any buttons that day. He came out and he said, "Do you think I would get sent off against Celtic? Do you think I would do anything to get sent off against Celtic?" I couldn't turn my notebook quickly enough.
Alex, I must say, I hadn't seen footage of that before, and you showed me it during the last break because someone got in touch with you to flag it up. That has to be one of the softest red cards you'll ever see, because he genuinely just crosses the ball and happens to hit the ref in the head accidentally, and the referee sends him off.
It's as bad a decision as we'll talk about all night. It was embarrassing, and you actually see him because he actually pushes the referee away. Couldn't believe it was actually sending him off. So for me, that goes down as one of the worst.
There we go, and I'm going to take this opportunity to do something that's never popular and stick up for the current crop of refs. As bad as some of the mistakes are that we moan about on a Monday, I don't think you'd get that anymore. I don't think there's any chance you get that type.
There's not a chance. There's not a chance that you could actually warrant giving anyone a card when they're crossing the ball. It's impossible.
Hopefully. Right, Stephen, thank you very much. That was Stephen in Paisley, and it takes us up nicely to this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Now, as you know, just after Beat the Pundit every night, we always try and speak to a Premiership player, a manager, a former player, find out a little bit about what they've been doing, what life has been like during the lockdown. And after a couple of weeks of trying, I think I've finally found the one player in the Scottish Premiership who isn't distraught to not be at training. This guy doesn't mind being in the house at the moment, and I'll explain why after Beat the Pundit. But if you want to play, 01419511025, and you have to call before 7.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, helping you return to action. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans is still with us from his man cave. Alex Ray is in the studio, and we've been asking you tonight for the refereeing decisions that broke your heart. It's a Monday night on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. In normal circumstances, we would be reflecting on all the big talking points, all the drama, all the controversy, and we can't really do that at the moment. So we thought we'd take a trip down memory lane and ask you for the refereeing decisions that broke your heart. The response has been overwhelming, but keep them coming. We're here until 8 o'clock, so we'll try and squeeze in as many as possible on the phones and on Twitter. We are about to speak to the Premiership footballer who actually doesn't mind being stuck at home at the moment. We'll explain why after this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
A new week, a clean slate on Beat the Pundit. Hugh Keevans, you're in the man cave, so I think we'll leave you be. It's going to be Alex Ray playing again tonight. Are you handling this newfound responsibility? You come in here and you know that it has to be you. I mean,
I don't mind.
Like I explained on Friday, there is a way we could make Hugh play. I just don't want to confuse him. See, if he starts pressing the buttons on that machine, we are in trouble. So Hugh, you can just be an interested spectator. Is that all right?
Well, I've had a day of upholstery cleaning. I'm fatigued.
Quite right. Take a breather and we'll speak to Jamie in Tillicutry. Hi, Jamie.
How you doing, panel? Loving the hard done by stories, by the way.
What have you got for us? You must have one.
Oh, personally, they didn't upset me, but the two that spring to mind, I don't know if anybody's mentioned it because I was out on the bike for a half hour early with the BAME, but there was a goal that never was at Dundee United, the one that hit the staunchion and came back at the net.
Yep, Partick Thistle, yep.
The other one I seem to remember was the Thierry Henry handball that got them into the World Cup against the Republic.
Yeah, you're in good company, don't worry.
Absolutely. I was an absolute stoter, but I'm under a bit of pressure, mate, because the Bairns demanding that I win this football because we can't find her and we're stuck in the house.
Oh no, Alex, I don't know how you feel about that. I don't know if you're going to. A man of your competitive spirit would never throw Beat the Pundit.
No, I've got a ball in a house. It needs air in it, and I'm dying to do this challenge. I said when Kevin was on Friday, I'm going to blow this ball up. I've not managed to do it yet, so if I lose this tonight,
the ball is on its way.
Benefit, yeah.
Hugh, I don't know if you noticed this. We had Kevin Thompson on Friday, Hugh, as you well know, talking about his challenge, and Stephen Gerrard had done it, and Jamie Redknapp had done it, and Barry Ferguson and Billy Gilmore and various others. He's crossed the divide. You'll have heard him talking about how Scott Brown would be, you know, his best pal in football, so to speak, the one guy he wouldn't mind being isolated with. He's now got him doing the challenge. It's spread like wildfire, Hugh, over the weekend.
Well, I've been isolated with Scott Brown in the past, as you well know, and I thought I was going to end up in Loch Lomond as a result. So Kevin can take Bruni and that'll be fine.
Right, let's give Alex some Clyde 2 to listen to, just so that he doesn't know what you're saying. Jamie, I'm going to put 30 seconds on the clock. The only thing you need to know is that you can pass. Other than that, it's straightforward enough. Are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
Good man, your time starts now. Which club did Rangers sign Alfredo Morelos from?
Helsinki.
Which Scottish club play their home games at Broadwood?
Clyde.
Which English side play their home games at Vicarage Road?
Watford.
In what position did Motherwell finish in last season's Premiership?
Third.
What nationality is St Mirren goalkeeper Vaclav Kladke?
Oh, I'm going to take a guess, Polish.
Who won last season's English FA Cup?
The pass.
No, just guess a team.
Southampton.
Right, okay. Let's bring Alex back. Alex, can you hear us?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Same set of questions to you. And your time starts now. Which club did Rangers sign Alfredo Morelos from?
Pass. Helsinki.
Which Scottish club play their home games at Broadwood?
Clyde.
Which English side play their home games at Vicarage Road?
Watford.
In which position did Motherwell finish in last season's Scottish Premiership?
Seventh.
What nationality is St Mirren's goalkeeper Vaclav Kladke?
Austrian.
Who won last season's English FA Cup?
Man City.
Who scored the winner in the 2009 Scottish Cup final?
Chris Boyd.
Okay. Jamie, what do you think?
I didn't think I'd done too well. I was doing all right about halfway through the questions, but I think Alex has picked me on it.
Well, let's find out. Which club did Rangers sign Alfredo Morelos from? It was HJK Helsinki. It was not Pass Helsinki. And you know the rule. What is the only rule of Fight Club? Oh, is that you can't, you have to accept your first answer.
No, fair enough.
All right, so you did say Pass Helsinki. Yes. Jamie got it, 1-0 to Jamie. Which Scottish club play their home games at Broadwood? Clyde, you both got it. Which English side play their home games at Vicarage Road? You both got it. So it's 3-2 to Jamie. In what position did Motherwell finish in last season's Premiership? It was 8th. Vaclav Kladke is from the Czech Republic. So Alex needs one of these last two to equalise. Who won last season's English FA Cup? Jamie, I can't believe you passed it when it was the last question. You just had to guess a team. You then guessed at Southampton, which definitely wasn't them. So Man City. Alex equalises 3-3. Who scored the winner in the 2009 Cup final? It all comes down to this. Does it go to the tiebreaker? Do you get the ball? It was Nacho Novo.
Oh, that's right. We spoke about that last week.
So it's 3-3 and it goes to the tiebreaker. Now, here's the way the tiebreaker works. I will read the question. I'll get Alex to write his answer down and I'll then invite you to give me your attempt, Jamie, okay?
Okay,
right, the question is this. How many league goals has James Forrest scored in his Celtic career? Write it down, please. How many league goals has James Forrest scored in his Celtic career? Show me your bit of paper if you can. Hurry up. Okay, Jamie, what would your guess be?
I'm going to go for 48.
Oh, this is interesting. Now, the reason it's interesting is because Alex has gone 47. Well, that's a dream for me. That's a dream for me because I don't need to worry about the arithmetic. It should be pretty simple for me to figure out who's closer. Alex goes 47.
Absolutely brilliant.
Alex goes 47. Jamie goes 48. And the answer is 58.
Oh, well
done, Jamie. Sign ball is on its way. You and your youngster can boot it around the living room until your heart's content or till you break an expensive ornament. Jamie, that sound good?
Jamie, you need to try and do the challenge. Just 50 keepy ups and send it in to
Alex, I can't even do 2 keepy ups. Never mind 50, mate.
You've got
a
wee bit of time now.
Practice. I've got all the time in the world. But I'm chuffed.
Cheers, boys. Brilliant. That was Jamie in Telecutry. There we go, Hugh. Always good when we can be of service. Jamie's youngster needs a new ball, and we've provided a new ball.
Yeah, that's a brilliant contest. I thought for a minute he's not going to let Alec off with Pass Helsinki.
No, no chance. I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it to you, so I won't do it to him. Same rules for everyone. Fair. Fair and consistent on Beat the Pundit. 01419511025. Now, if you've been listening to the show in the last couple of weeks, as I said, I think that's us coming off the fourth weekend without football. So the show has been a bit different. It sounded a bit different in the last few weeks. And we've been trying our best to check in with different footballers and managers and coaches all around the country, find out a bit about what life's been like for them, what's been happening, how they've been passing their time. And I told you that after all these weeks, I've eventually found the one footballer who doesn't mind being in lockdown because he's got other things on his plate at the moment. It so happens that that man is also not too bad at Beat the Pundit, so it's fitting that he should follow on. We're joined by St Mirren captain Stephen McGinn. Stephen, how are you?
Yeah, not bad, Gordon. Not bad.
Thank you for taking the time out of what is now a very different schedule for you. How has life changed during lockdown?
Yeah, massively. I've got massive respect for anyone that manages to live a normal life with a baby.
So you have become a father for the first time during lockdown, yes?
Yes, yes. Baby Hannah.
Baby Hannah. When was that?
A week past Thursday.
Okay,
well, listen, yeah, first and foremost, on behalf of everyone at the show, we know you join us from time to time, congratulations. What's it been like?
It's been strange, really, because probably in my profession, you don't really get the luxury of spending the first 2 weeks, morning, noon and night, with a newborn baby, without distractions of games and hotel stays and stuff like that. So very fortunate to have a paid paternity.
Yeah, I was kind of making light of it. I didn't mean to over exaggerate it and say, you know, you're not bothered about lockdown. I was obviously tongue slightly in cheek, but it must be, I don't know, is there a silver lining there that you're, you know, at least getting this time to spend quality time with Hannah and everyone else?
It was weird. It's weird, probably, because I try and watch every game that's ever on telly, and then all of a sudden that stops. So not only does that stop, you're kind of waiting. Actually, went 2 weeks overdue as well. So I spent 3 weeks pretty much waiting as a taxi driver to take her to hospital with no football and nothing else happening in the football world. So I struggled with that. And then all of a sudden this baby comes along and football doesn't really matter for a very short spell.
Yeah, that's it. Newfound perspective. I've got a bit of an ongoing thought on this show that no matter what happens, Hugh Keevans has got a story. You know that way, Alex?
Absolutely.
And I phoned him earlier on. I don't mind telling. And I said, we're going to get Stephen McGinn. He's going to come on. He's just had a baby. It's something a bit different. And of course, Hugh had a similar story. And you think, how can you possibly have a similar story? So take it away, Mr. Keevans.
Well, first of all, Stephen, let me say to you and to your good lady, congratulations on the arrival of baby Hannah. What happened to me, Stephen, 1981, baby Gemma, born on the Thursday. On the Friday, the newspaper I was working for at the time, well, we had a dispute and we went out on strike the day after the baby was born. And we were out on strike for 5 weeks. Now, that it was incredible. I got to know the baby better than any of the two who had gone before. And that they all grew up to be taught by your mother, incidentally. But one thing I will say to you, the only piece of paternal advice I will offer you, take every day and cherish it with baby Hannah, because time flashes by. Next week, baby Gemma will be 39 years old.
Wow.
So she'll be on the phone to complain that I mentioned her age on the radio. However, that's how time passes. Next week she'll be 39 years old, and we had the first 5 weeks together. So I know exactly what you're experiencing. And let me tell you, you're a lucky man, because back then there were no wet wipes and no disposable nappies.
Steve, on that note, Stephen, we've had a number of different players on. Some of your, I think Lee Hodson, your St Mirren colleague, was on as well. And they've all been saying, I've been watching this box set and I've been fine-tuning this old skill that I'd let go in the last few years, whatever it may be. And you have just been really mastering how to change a nappy, ultimately.
Yeah, and hogging the baby as well. We're timing each other for how long we spend with her.
On a more serious note, Stephen, I don't suppose, though, it's come without its difficulties, because it should be a hugely exciting time where you get to show the baby off to family and friends and particularly, you know, grandparents, close family. How difficult has that been, having that side of things taken away from you?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, both our mums, the first day or two kind of came to the window and did a bit of window shopping, but I think they've started to really struggle with it. I think they decide FaceTime's a bit easier. Being so close and they'll be able to get near or hold or touch or anything, a bit of a struggle. So I think they're just getting by on FaceTime. But yeah, it's not easy. A lot of my friends that have babies in the last year or two tell us how lucky we are that we don't have a million visitors every day. And making endless cups of tea and coffee. But yeah, it's a testing time, but it's a testing time for everyone. And me and Ashley are just lucky that we've got something to really focus on and get us through this difficult time.
Yeah, Hugh, that's the thing, Hugh, and that's why, in a strange way, Super Scoreboard in the last couple of weeks becomes about more than football. It becomes about this full situation and how it's impacting people's lives, and maybe people listening will be able to sympathise with that, and will recognise the challenges of what Stephen's saying. You know, things you just take for granted. Lots of people will have had newborn babies in the last couple of weeks, and that most automatic thing of, you know, being visited by grandparents or visiting family members and sharing that type of joy, it's just not there at the moment.
Well, I remember our baby Gemma's christening, and it was one of the best days we have ever had. And Stephen and Ashley have been denied that for the moment. But when this dark cloud passes, Stephen, there'll be a big party of that, there can be no doubt. My two youngest grandkids come up here every day on their scooters. One's 4 and one is 6. And we open the window out, and they come up and they wave to us. Now, you know, you wouldn't have believed that would ever happen to you in your life, but we have a conversation through a window frame. They get their bag of goodies and off they go on the scooters. So we'll all get through this one way or another.
And Stephen, I suppose it will have given you that new sense of perspective, and that's something we've kind of tried to maintain over the last couple of weeks. You know, people are, at another time, you maybe think you would have been debating in your head about where should the football season go and what should end, and how it should end, sorry, and if it should end. But realistically, there's a lot more important things going on, as you will well know.
Yeah, and it's mad how our last game, depending if it went the other way, how much we'd have been screaming for something different if we were sitting bottom of the league having lost the Hearts. It's mad, but the most difficult period in my last 10 days is probably getting some of my fellow teammates to work emails earlier today.
Is that right? Are captain's duties not without obstacles?
Well, part of the thing is the team was all to fill out this email about further details that come out down the line, but honestly, I'm almost FaceTiming to get them to send an email.
So let me get this straight. Technology has now moved on so far that actually the youngsters don't do email. Is that what you're telling us? Email is now defunct?
Well, no naming any names. It's not just the youngsters.
Alright, okay. Hugh Keevan's Unity, buck up your ideas. You're still struggling with the Nokia, and Stephen's telling us that emails are done. They're done and dusted.
Well, I could do an email. I've no idea what FaceTime is, but I could do an email. So if you want to email me, Stephen, I'll send you back all the paternal advice gained over a long number of years.
Stephen, at the moment, what kind of programme are you doing? Is it running, weights, anything, house? What is the programme?
It's different. It differs because it depends on kind of what you've got in your house.
Sure.
Junior Mendes is pretty proactive. I mean, he's asked the boys, basically, what have you got in your house? And set a kind of for what kind of work you can do gym-wise. Running-wise, obviously allowed out once a day for exercise. So he set us a programme for runs we can do. And with all the different apps you can get, technology, you record your runs, and we've got a group chat with Junior in it. So we send and he keeps a recording of what kind of data we're showing, and so he can probably determine if the season was to start back soon and we were to report back in the training in 2 weeks, for example. I know it won't happen, but he's at least got some data for where we're at individually.
I've got these horrible images of Stephen doing his squats with baby
tin of beans
in his arm, with young Hannah in his arms. Please be safe, Stephen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks,
good man. That was Stephen McGinn. Congratulations again to him and his partner Ashley on the birth of young Hannah amid these mad times. Just something to cheer him up. There we go. That was Stephen McGinn on the line. We've got some breaking news coming out of Ibrox tonight. We'll bring you it next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Experienced players who know how to win. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We are about to get the full time teaser up and running, and we're still looking for all your suggestions on the refereeing decision that broke your heart. That's the type of thing we would discuss on a Monday night usually. Bad refereeing decisions, drama, talking points. So let's do it with a bit of a twist on it this evening. We do have a bit of breaking news for you though, just to bring you Rangers boss Steven Gerrard. The first team players, coaches and executive directors have volunteered to defer their wages for the next 3 months? Hugh Keevans?
Well, there's a financial battleground now, and it revolves around the fact that clubs have no income and high running costs, and Rangers will have very high running costs because they pay the players and Steven Gerrard very well. They weren't in the strongest financial position to begin with. Everyone knows that to be the case. The fresh investment they thought might come in, that stalled because of the global economic crisis that's going on. Season tickets, you can't sell season tickets because when does football come back and in what form is it coming back in? So all of these things have led to various situations where clubs are doing what they can to survive over there. Hearts high profile, Aberdeen high profile, Hibs high profile, Celtic are making arrangements to cover their situation, and now Rangers have come out and made it quite clear. Wages deferred for 3 months. The club know what they need to do to get by.
Yeah, without doubt. I think Hugh is absolutely right in terms of getting by. I think the 50% wage deferral gives them breathing space for 3 months. I think most clubs will be in a similar vein to try and mitigate the money that's actually going out the door at these troubled times. And as Hugh says there, but Hugh, is there not clubs actually selling season tickets at the moment?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean that's entirely. I mean, Hibs have done well.
I think Aberdeen as well, haven't they?
Yeah, but it's a difficult one because it's a leap of faith. You're buying your season ticket. I mean, in the case of Hearts, for example, you could be buying a season ticket while not knowing which division you'll be in next season. So the Rangers fans will have their own, like every fan at every club, the Rangers fans will have their own financial imperatives to deal with in terms of their own lives, and there may be uncertainty over jobs and so on and so forth. The world finds itself in a terrible position right now in terms of economics. And football clubs here in Scotland, they really have to make sure that when football does come back, when this dark cloud passes, that they're all still in business.
Yeah, it's understood first team players made an approach, you know, in a move to prevent potential wage cuts to behind the scenes staff. So hopefully everyone can come through that, Hugh, relatively unscathed at all clubs. I know no one does daft tribalism like us. There are still some on social media who want to turn this into some sort of competition over which club is coping with this the best. And it, for me, all that stuff just sits pretty uncomfortably. Maybe that's just a personal thing, but there's a bigger picture at play here.
Yeah, of course. When you look at Liverpool, who statistically are the biggest football club in the world, because, you know, Champions League and then the World Club Championship, they're the number one football club in the world. And they are getting involved in the government's job retention.
Well, just let me stop you there, because I think tonight they're U-turning on that, Hugh, because they've had a lot of stick for it, and you can understand why, that clubs at that end of the table would feel the need to do that. So they've had a lot of stick and they appear to have taken it on board.
Well, when Jamie Carragher comes out and criticises Liverpool, you know that something big has occurred. And if Liverpool have U-turned, then fine. Everyone must do what suits them best. And it tarnished Liverpool's image, I think, to become involved in that. It wasn't, I don't think, created for clubs of that stature. So they've taken that decision. But Rangers tonight and all the clubs who have already taken steps are trying to safeguard their future. That's the name of the game now.
Yeah, just to recap, Rangers players, Steven Gerrard amongst them, agreeing a 50% wage deferral for the next 3 months. So, as you well know, we're in the midst of this lockdown period, no football at the moment, no money coming in through the gates, everything's up in the air, and those are the measures being taken at Ibrox at the moment. Let me get tonight's teaser up and running. Mikey Burns says, since the 2002 Scottish Cup final was on TV last night, I'm wondering if you can name the 9 other players that have scored in an Old Firm Cup final since. So since the 2002 Cup final was on TV last night, I'm wondering if you can name the 9 other players that have scored in an Old Firm Cup final since then. Any that jump out for you, Hugh?
Dembele.
Edward.
Nope. None of them were finals.
Griffiths.
Nope. Remember, they don't meet that often in finals.
Yeah, I'm just trying.
It's been a good few years. Oh, well, apart from the obvious, Jelovic, I think, is one of them. Yes, the 2011 League Cup final.
Boyd? No, he didn't score.
No.
Commons?
Nope. Now remember, this is when I just said cup final, so it can be League Cup or Scottish Cup. No.
Julien.
Yeah, Christopher Julien. Okay, that's two down, seven to go. Let's go back to the phones and try and get stuck into that old trip down memory lane once more. The refereeing decisions that broke your heart. John in Coatbridge, what sticks out for you?
Hi, Hugh, Alec. And
hi,
Gordon.
John.
How are you?
Hi, John.
Doing your belt. The one that sticks out for me is I could be here all night, you know what I mean, going about shit by the time I'm going to tell it. But anyway, I don't like to bore you. The one is, I think it was 99, the penalty Hugh Dallas gave. I was sitting at in the stand, and after all what happened with Hugh Dallas, I turned around and says to my mate, see when this corner gets thrown over, I can't remember what it was, I says, he'll give you a penalty here, it's a stick on. And sure as God, you know what I mean, apparently it was, there was no contact or nothing, you know what I mean, and that's one Stephen Mahy, but I don't remember that one, Hugh.
Yeah, I remember it very well because at the time Celtic had a chief executive whose name was Alan McDonald, and he gave a video of the game to a behavioural psychologist in London who came to the conclusion that Hugh Dallas had been over-familiar with the Rangers players, the suggestion being that he had an agenda one way and not the other. Now, I knew Hugh Dallas very well, and Hugh Dallas was involved in controversies involving Celtic Rangers matches that went both ways. The high-profile one you are remembering now, John, he was struck by a coin. There was some suggestion he might have been still dazed when he awarded the penalty. All I can say to you, all I can say to you is that Hugh Dallas refereed very many Rangers Celtic or Celtic Rangers matches, and having known the man very well, he had no agenda. He was a big Motherwell fan for a start, and he gave not controversial decisions. He gave big calls in favour of Celtic and against Celtic, big calls in favour of Rangers and against Rangers. He was the best referee in the country. You remember that one because it was costly for Celtic. But if you're honest, Celtic didn't play well that day either, and Rangers deserved to win the match.
I can't believe, Alex, you've not come up with one that you've been particularly hard done by as a player. There must have been one of the sendings off that you thought, oh, no chance. No, not even one.
Well, I often told you one with Lee Bowyer. I went for the tackle, he toe poked it past me, but he jumped up and then I made no contact and I got a second yellow card. I never even got a chance to get him back over the years after that. But anyway, that was another bad decision.
John, they stay with us for a long time, as you've shown. Any from recent seasons that jump out? John? Still got us, John? I mean, he's there, I can hear him, I don't know what on earth he's doing. So we'll leave John in Coatbridge for now. Thank you very much for the memory. We are still on Twitter taking these in. Taylor Scott says Andy Halliday sent off against Morton at Capello for celebrating in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
Chrissy Ayer-Smith says it wasn't heartbreaking but absolutely baffling, Neil Lennon not getting that penalty awarded at Ibrox. Do you remember that one, Hugh?
Oh yeah, people will talk about stick-ons and all that. It was an honest-to-goodness stick-on. And Neil, it was at the Rangers' end of the ground, if I can put it that way. And he was battering the ground in frustration. And, of course, the Rangers fans were gleeful at his displeasure. But if you'll take my word for it, it was a penalty all day long.
I think Hugh Keevans should just decide. I think we should put him in charge. Imagine one game, just standing in the centre circle, just dictating things, seeing how many people he could annoy.
Yeah, without doubt. I was just going back to that kind of Stephen Mahy one. And for me, he kind of pulls him to the ground, Gordon, when he's kind of rolling him a little bit. He's got his arm behind him and kind of pulls him to the ground. So, you know,
so but you think there's still a bit of debate?
Possibly a penalty.
I like it when our listeners are delving deep into the memory bank. They're also thinking outside the box as well. Different countries, so not necessarily ones that broke your heart. Sean Gunn says, one of the worst refereeing decisions, I remember this, Brazil-Turkey in the World Cup, June 2002. He says Turkish player Hakan Ünsal was sent off with a second yellow for hurting Rivaldo. Remember, he kicks the ball. Is Rivaldo not going to take a corner? and he kicks the ball at him. I think it hits Rivaldo maybe knee height, thigh height, something
like
that.
He holds his face.
He goes down holding his face.
It was disgusting. It was absolutely diabolical. Yeah, absolutely. I remember that one.
So disappointing as well, wasn't it? Because what a player.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, I think there's been a few incidents over the year where players have gone down easily when something like that's happened, and they've conned the referee.
0141 951 1025, if you want to phone at Clyde SSB on Twitter. I'm now having to sift in amongst all the responses to the other tweets that are going out about what's happening at Rangers at the moment, to try and find your refereeing memories, which is not an easy task, let me tell you. Good to see that. You know, I was under this impression that everyone would be nice to each other over this period.
Yes.
And wouldn't want to point score over stuff like this. But, you know,
Gordon, do you know, you can back to that famous game where obviously Hugh Dallas got hit with the coin. I asked Peter Reid, who was my gaffer at the time, if he could get us a ticket. And he says, Alex, it's only two or three days to the game. I says, gaffer, try your best. Well, I want to go, but it's the first time that Rangers might win the league at Parkhead. And he sent me in the Celtic end.
So how did Peter Reid manage to get a ticket for a game and you couldn't?
He sent me up as
I thought you would be well connected.
He sent me up as the chief scout, and I wound up in the Celtic end. It was tricky, to say the least.
Jim McLaughlin, I think, yeah, tricky just about covers it, Hugh.
Yeah, was Peter Reid not a bit of a Celtic fan himself?
There was Peter Reid, Adrian Heath, Niall Quinn, Paul Butler. We had a host of Celtic fans at Sunderland at that time, yes.
Jim McLaughlin says, May 96, second leg of a playoff. Rab Shannon halves Nicky Henderson in the box. 30 seconds left. Les Mottram plays on. Dundee United equalise. Thistle get relegated. If he'd given a dive, which it wasn't, it would have run the clock down. Same season as Les's ghost goal at Firhill. I didn't know that, Hugh. I didn't know Partick Thistle's issues with Les Mottram had more than one episode in the same season.
Well, as I say, at the end of that season, Les Mottram goes to America and takes part in the World Cup finals, no less. He was a good referee, but, you know, like the best of us, sometimes you can just have a bad day at the office, a rank bad day at the office. I've had a few myself.
Absolutely. Right, let's take a breather from that. In fact, let me check in on the teaser first and foremost. Mikey Burns says, since the 2002 Scottish Cup final was on TV last night, can you name 9 others that have scored in an Old Firm Cup final since? You've got Julien so far. And Jelovic.
Darren O'Dea.
Yes.
Aidan McGeady.
Yes, in the same game.
Well done, Hugh.
John Hartson.
No.
Sutton.
Chris Sutton.
No.
Petrov.
No. All right, we'll leave it there and we'll get the rest of the answers next. But before we do anything, something really important I want to talk to you about.
Clyde One's Cash for Kids appeal.
Well, the Cash for Kids appeal, I think that's 2 weeks ago. We launched it now, and really, we have been overwhelmed by the response. To help families who are feeling the financial impact of coronavirus the most, your donations really will make a huge difference, but there are still many more families that need help. Easter weekend's approaching. It's likely you'll be buying less chocolate eggs this year, so why not donate the value of an Easter egg to our appeal? 100% of the donations will be used to help families pay for just the basics, just stuff that every family needs. Food, nappies, baby milk, even electricity. So if you can spare anything, and I know it's tough for everyone, but if you can spare anything, please make a donation at clyde1.com/appeal.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Tackling compensation claims for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Alex Ray is here. Hugh Keevans is still in the man cave. Everything okay at your end, Hugh?
Absolutely wonderful.
Good stuff. You're working this technology like a dream. You're slowly but surely shaking off your tag as being useless at working the modern technology. Well done.
Now, you see, you put the mockers on it now. I won't be here on Friday night. Something will happen.
Yeah, if Hugh suddenly disappears, he's just pressed a button or unplugged something. He will be back. We're looking for 9 players who've scored in an Old Firm Cup final since 2002. You've got Aidan McGeady, Darren O'Dea, and Christopher Julien from Celtic. You've got Nikita Jelovic from Rangers.
Barry Ferguson.
No. He scored in 2002. Yes, he did at the League Cup final the following season.
Many are we looking for, Gordon?
1, 2, 3, 4 to go.
Did we say Gary Hooper?
No.
We said Novo, did we?
Yeah, Novo's not one.
Kuzan?
No. All right, we'll leave it there. Let's speak to Brian in Larkhall. Brian, the refereeing decision that broke your heart?
I wouldn't say it broke my heart, but it certainly annoyed me at the time. Thanks for letting me on. I hope you are all safe.
Yeah, same to you.
Right, it was, you need to go back to November 95. It was a league game at Ibrox. It was a 3-8 draw. This is also remembered for a save that Andy Gorham made from Pierre Van Hooydonk at the time of header. But Celtic were 1-0 in front in that game, and Rangers got an equaliser. And I wasn't at the game. I was watching on television. I'll tell you how bad it was. It was on STV, and I think Jerry McNee was the commentator, and it might have been Charlie Nicholas that was in the commentary box with him. They actually took 10 minutes to realise that the goal had been disallowed. It was a through ball below drop to David Robertson. Robertson scores, and it's disallowed, and it shows you it back. And it has to be the worst offside decision, you know, denying a goal. He must have been about 3 or 4 yards onside.
You, do you remember that one? A few people tweeted in about that earlier, I must say.
I have to say, I remember the Andy Gorham save more than I remember the disallowed goal. But, in Rangers-Celtic games, these mistakes do occur. And that was perhaps as bad a mistake as George Cadetti having a goal disallowed at Ibrox. So, as I say, Celtic and Rangers fans don't believe it, but swings and roundabouts.
Well, don't start us arguing about which was further offside. I don't think anyone needs that tonight. Alex, do you remember the one that Brian mentions? Because a few people did tweet about it earlier.
Someone texted me about it, Gordon, but within that text as well, and he's absolutely right in what he's saying there. It was the game was remembered for the save that Andy Gorham made.
Yeah, and they've all got similar memories, though, I must say. Jim Stewart mentions the same goal. So does Thomas Hugh. He says, David Robertson goal, it was around 12 minutes into the game, and Jerry McNee never noticed the goal was chopped off when he was doing the commentary. Dell also saying David Robertson scored a good goal, wrongly ruled offside, game finished 3-3. The game that Gorham made that save. So there we go, all similar memories. It's funny that, Brian, how you link it to the TV coverage. A lot of people are remembering that the television coverage seemed to miss the fact that it hadn't been given.
Well, I'm actually 60 next year. My first period supporting Rangers in the mid-70s to the early 90s was going to the games. And then, you know, because of one reason or another, I stopped going. They're still in my heart. They always will be. Can I say something else?
Of course you can.
That's okay. It's regarding Rangers making an announcement that the players and the staff are going to do I think it's a 50% deferral.
Yeah.
Now, I'm delighted Rangers have come out and, there's clarity, giving us clarity. Because obviously at this moment in time, every football club has to make sure that their business stays in an even keel. I'm also delighted that Liverpool have overturned going to get down the government's furlough. Am I right in saying this, that Celtic are using this government scheme to pay non-football employees? If I am, I'm really concerned about that. Celtic, I don't think any huge football club should be using that scheme. That scheme is for smaller businesses who will probably go to the wall if they're left to their own devices. The government have got money set aside, and to me, huge football clubs should not be using that particular device.
Hugh Keevans.
Well, bigger organisations than Celtic are using it. I personally would have thought that Celtic could have done without it, given the cash reserves that they have. However, bigger institutions than Celtic are using it. Richard Branson and Virgin Airways are using it, and huge multinationals are using it. So it is there, and I think perhaps the government have underestimated the race to take advantage of their job retention scheme. But when you have a situation where Rangers and Celtic are paying the kind of wages that they are paying, and you have nothing, literally nothing, coming in week after week, You have got to take steps to protect and safeguard your future.
All right, thank you to Brian in Larkhall. We're asking you tonight for the refereeing decisions that broke your heart. That's the type of debate, the type of nonsense we would usually go through on a Monday night, but we don't have a fresh weekend to reflect on. So we're trying to do some of the memorable ones from years gone by. Any more on the teaser quickly?
I'm struggling, Hugh.
I mean, talk about obvious ones that you're missing.
Larson.
Yes.
Larson.
2003 League Cup final. You've got one Celtic and two Rangers to go.
It doesn't ring a bell.
No. All right, we'll leave it there. Let's speak to John Paul in Fauldhouse. Hi, John Paul.
Evening, Gordon, Alec, and Hugh. Hope you're all safe and doing well.
Yeah, thank good. You. Thanks.
Thank you. I listened to the show there, and I can always mind the one that I revert back to. It was Willie Collin at Parkhead, and he gave a penalty. He wasn't even looking at the division. He gave a penalty against Daniel Mostorovic. My mind tells me that Broadfoot went down in the box, came in, and Broadfoot had turned into him, and he just dropped himself to the ground. Willie Collin turned around, sees him on the ground, and gives a penalty. It was to put Rangers up 2-1. I was at the game that day. I gave my dad's friend my ticket. I can mind watching it on TV, and I was shouting pretty horrible stuff. I don't think I've ever forgiven since, actually. I was hearing it stinking because he used to be a teacher at my school, and I was shouting, he was a teacher, but I can mind it, and it always broke my heart. I don't know if you can mind it, but it broke my heart. It was to put Rangers up 2-1. Kenny Moore got a double that day.
This is you weren't playing, Alex, were you?
No, I wasn't, no. But I've actually seen Kirk Broadfoot. I worked with Kirk at Blackpool. And, you know, he was always trying to nick a free kick, or, you know, it was just his, you know, but he was clever with it. It was quite cute as well, you know. Some people say, you know, he's going over too easy, but, you know, players do it time after time.
And Hugh, this is where we're seeing the different dynamic here, because when you're at the game, yeah, you get caught up with all your pals round about you, and you're all raging, and you might feel hard done by, but you can't be that sure because you've not seen it back. However, when you're watching it on TV and you've been subjected to 15 super slow-mo replays from every which angle, that's when it allows suitable time for your blood to really come to the boil.
Well, I'll go back to the point I made earlier. We always want transparency, and when Willie Collin is asked after the game, what about that penalty decision, and when he says, I heard contact, everyone, trust me, everyone looks up from their notebook and thinks, you what? And supporters are exactly the same. But I give you, this season, the same man, the same two teams, and Rangers feel aggrieved because Willie Collin has given a goal for Christopher Julien, which wins a cup final. And Rangers fans to this day will still say to you, it was offside.
Just remind me, Hugh, what was the vehicle for that comment? Was that during that period where referees were able to come and explain things?
You could even, you know, in those days, you could have gone outside and spoken to the referee. You know, if he'd come out of the ground and walked to his car, you could speak to the referee. But Willie, that day,
it wasn't that long ago, was it?
Well, but whatever happened, you know, Willie would have been able to speak to the reporters. The SFA then decided that this wasn't a good idea, really, because referees were going to be scrutinised and put under the microscope every week. But that day, he said, I heard contact. And it's one of the comments that will go down in Scottish football history. I heard contact.
There we go. Thank you very much to John Paul in Fauldhouse. I think that leaves it there. I always just like to try and get a bit of detail. I just typed it into Google there, and it's interesting because there's a report from 2010, from when it happened. It says, rookie referee Willie Collin in the Old Firm spotlight. That's the headline from the Telegraph. So it's funny how you quickly become not a rookie. You become exactly one of the more experienced guys, but the controversy never leaves you, does it? There we go. I think that'll be the final call. So thanks again to John Paul for rounding things off. Thank you also to Mikey on tonight's teaser. And let me just remind you that if you want to hear your questions used in the show, the address you need is fulltime@clyde1.com. That's fulltime@clyde1.com. So tonight Mikey says, can you name the 9 players that have scored in an Old Firm Cup final since 2002? You've got Henrik Larsson, Aidan McGeady, Darren O'Dea, and Christopher Julien. You need one more Celtic. You've got Peter Lovenkrantz, Nikica Jelovic, and you need two more Rangers.
Hugh, what about the Warburton?
None
of them ones, no.
That wasn't a cup final. So Warburton's cup final was against Hibs, remember?
Yeah. Yes, sorry, that's right, semi-final, yep. Struggling, we need some clues.
Okay, the Celtic one was the 2011 League Cup final.
Samaras?
Nope. He was a midfielder. And he was Welsh.
Ledley?
Yes, Joe Ledley. Right, that's you done with Celtic. So let's move on to Rangers. You're looking for one in the 2011 League Cup final. So remember, is that the St Mirren game? Jelovic? Who was the other goal scorer?
Oh, Naismith?
No. Right era though. What if this guy's back at the club now?
Davis?
Yes, Stephen Davis. And the other one, I mean, what a career this guy had. South American.
I was going to say Pena there.
No, it wasn't Carlos Pena, no.
Yeah.
Argentinian.
Yes, it was the winger with the
long hair.
Yeah, Caniggia.
Claudio Caniggia. We got there in the end. Thank you very much to Hugh Keevans and Alex Ray for joining me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Thanks for all your tweets and calls. It was a pleasure having you keep us company during these bizarre times. We are back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Gordon DL will be here. We'll have Roger Hanna on the show as well. And just stay right there, because Callum Gallagher is up next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Your comeback is on. Talk to Thompson's.com. Let's go, Gary.